3, 2, 1. Ah, hi, how are you? It is 1 o'clock. It's Monday, so it is time for Pirkei Avot History and Hashkafa, brought to you by, sponsored by Tel Aviv International Synagogue under the inspired leadership of Rabbi Ariel Constantine. And I have an announcement. And the announcement is that this coming Shabbat, the 4th and 25th of December, Parshat Shmot, I will be substituting for Rabbi Constantine at the synagogue in Tel Aviv on Rehov Frischmann. And I think people should go to shul anyways, but if you'd like to come by and say hi, please do. Tefillah is at, 4:20, followed by Champagne Kiddush. And then in the morning, we have a hot Kiddush, and I'll be speaking Shabbat afternoon between Mincha and Arvit. And please come by. I think it'll be fun. So that is that's my announcement. I do have one thing I'd like to share with you. I don't think I'm going to do this, but I'm actually thinking about it. So let me know when you read the when you see this, if you want to write a comment, what you think. I was actually thinking of, you know, there's an American weird custom that on the eve of Christmas, on Christmas Eve, the Jews do two things. So they eat Chinese food and they go to the movies. So obviously this year there's no going to the movies, and in Israel there's generally no Christmas either. But go to the movies, we can't, it's Shabbat. But I understand that you can order from Homasine, to the supposedly one of the best Chinese restaurants, if not the only Chinese restaurant in Israel, take out for Shabbos. So I'm thinking about it. Those of you who are interested might want to look up the possibility. I did get an ad for somebody in Jerusalem who's doing that, but I'm not schlepping food all the way from one place to the other. All right, enough. Enough for silliness. In fact, that might be one of the things I might talk about on Shabbat, is the history of the of Jewish practices on Christmas Eve. There are a lot of superstitions, a lot of fake news about what you do on Christmas Eve and why you do it. And maybe we'll have a small discussion of that. Okay, we were in the middle of conflating the descriptions of given by Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai of his various students and their obiter dicta. Please excuse me. Last week my phone went under. Now it seems that the shul thing has collapsed, so I'm gonna start again. Just give me a sec. 2, 3, 1. Hi, so we're back. All right, so we are now we're back to where we were. All right, so we were discussing the as I said, conflating the stories of and the information that we have about the students of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and their favorite sayings, to see if we can get an insight into their personalities, to see if it all sort of hangs to together. So let me remind you that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had five students, or five key disciples. Only two of them really, or of any, made a large, long-term mark on Judaism. The first, Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus, we spoke about at length. The second one, whom we're going to discuss today, is Rabbi Yehoshua ben Hananya. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Hananya really is the polar opposite in many, many ways of Rabbi Elazar. On the one hand, if Rabbi Elazar came from wealth, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Hananya, who came from the town of Bekiyin in the Galilee, was from a working class or worse family. He was a blacksmith apparently by trade, so tradition would have it. I would mention that the town of Bekiyin in the Galil, in the central Galil, is, according to tradition, the one place in the land of Israel where Jews have always lived, never left. There was one family, the Zinati family, which claims uninterrupted residence in Bakiyan from the time of the Second Temple and before. According to tradition, the synagogue in Bakiyan is made up with, is the Beit Midrash, of Rabbi Shimon ben Hananya in Talmudic times, and was made included stones from the temple. Of course, today there's something of a problem. The one person, the one member of the family who survived, who really never left Bakiyan, Miss Margalit Zinati, never married. She has no children. So she should be 120. By her counts, that will bring the tradition to an end. She has a cousin, however. The cousin, who is also a Zinati, apparently moved away to, at least the way she told me, moved away to Tveria for a while and then came back. But as far as she's concerned, that broke the chain. And the fact that he's there doesn't count, then she's the last of the Mohicans, and that's what she claims. Okay, either way. But there were other Jews who lived there. It's a mixed village, mostly Druze and Jews. And I highly recommend that you visit when you're in the Galil, in any event. So Rabbi Yeshua was really from the other side of tracks. In addition, it's interesting. I don't know if this goes together or not, but he was also something of a, more liberal. He was more expansive as an interpreter of Torah. As we talked about the fact that Rabbi Eliezer was more conservative, he never said anything that he didn't hear from his teacher. Rabbi Yeshua was far more willing to be a little bit more daring, more innovative in his interpretation of the Torah. It doesn't mean he didn't stick to the rules. Of course, he stuck to the rules, but he shows a lot more intellectual daring, and he is the one in the famous encounter in the oven of Achnai that when a heavenly voice comes out and says, "Why are you bothering Eliezer? We agree. The law is always in accordance with his opinion." So Rabbi Yeshua gets on his feet and said, "Excuse me, Lo b'shamayim hi, you gave us the Torah, O God, and now you gave us the authority to interpret it as we wish, and that's it. No, you know, no taking back." Which is a very gutsy thing to do, especially for a person who came from no, you know, as it were, no yichus. In any event, so you have really, and they locked horns on many occasions, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. Later on, Rabbi Yeshua locks horns with Rabbi Gamliel, the head of the Sanhedrin. And on a number of occasions, Rabbi Gamliel humiliates Rabbi Yeshua, which in the end leads to the deposing of Rabbi Gamliel for a period of time. So he's a very complicated person. He's just because he came from modest circumstances didn't mean that he was shy, and didn't mean that he, you know, hid his opinion. On the contrary, when a matter of principle was at stake, he was more than willing to stand up for his principles. And that's not a small thing if you're if you don't come from money and you don't come from yichas, to nevertheless take on the big boys. That's quite something. That's what Rabbi Yeshua did. So let's see how he's characterized, what he said, and try to put it all together. So when Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai tries to characterize or to say something nice about his various students, so when it comes to Rabbi Shimon ben Hananya, he says, this is chapter 2, Mishnah 8, he says, Rabbi Shimon ben Hananya, Ashrei yoladito, happy is the woman who gave birth to him. Now that's kind of anodyne. You can say that's, there's nothing. See, when he talks about Rabbi Elizabeth and Horkanos, he says he's a guy with an incredible memory. He never misses anything. Later on in the same Mishnah, he mentions his student Rabbi Elizabeth Arach, who is apparently a wildly brilliant and creative individual. And he says he's like an ever increasing, ever sustaining fountain. Happy is the woman who gave birth to him. No, okay. I mean, that's sort of like to whom it may concern. you know, it's like, I don't know, when I was, I won't say mention names, of course, when I was a young assistant rabbi somewhere, so the senior rabbi who I worked with used to sit on Motzi Shabbos, and he would write a eulogy and something for a pidyon haben and for a bris. Because he didn't know what was going to pop up during the week. Somebody might die, he has to have a eulogy ready. But there was like, you know, one size fits all. That's the same thing. Yashrei Oladeto. Why dafka that? Why be so, I don't know, so general, so powerful about it? I have an idea. You probably won't be surprised. I will come back to it in a bit. Later on, Rabbi Nachman Zakkai says to all the five students, all right, go out and see how could you express the best way for a person to live his life? And everybody has a different, position. Interestingly, Rabbi Eliezer says, ayin tova and ayin ra, avoid a bad eye and an evil eye. We'll come back to that. And Rabbi Yeshua says, no, chaver tov v'chaver ra. If you really want to live a good life, you want to live a proper life, you want to live a constructive life, you want to live a moral life, make good friends, and make sure and be discerning. Be careful about the friends that you make, and make sure that they're people of the kind of moral quality and my kind of character that that reflect the kind of life you want to live.
Okay.
Now that's mission number two. Mission number three. When we get to mission number three, is mission 11. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Ayin. Now here we have an interesting question about what's the text. Ayin hara, the evil eye, or an evil eye. Okay, because it could be Ayin ra or Ayin hara, the yetzer hara and the evil inclination, the sinat habriot and hating other people, motziim et adam min haolam. Those things will actually. Well, motziyat adam alam can mean two things also. It can mean will prevent him from having a place in society, will cause his death, actually can mean three things, and could mean that he doesn't have a place in the next world. Well, so that's what he says. So the question is, so there are a couple questions to be asked. First, we have to define the terms. What's a good friend that we've spoken about in the past? I don't think we have to go back to that. Maimonides, Rav Soloveitchik used to always say this. Maimonides, when he talks about the importance of friendship, one of the things he says is maybe the most important thing is to be you have to have a person who will be there for you and so on. There's always chemistry between friends, but the most important thing is you should have a chaver ledeya, that really you should be friends on a very profound level, not just utilitarian, but that you share your outlook, share your values. Share a common language. Not. I don't mean in terms of lexicology. Again, in terms of linguistics. I mean that you understand each other. That's a good friend. That's a real good friend. Chavera is the opposite. Right. What's ayin hara? What's ayin hara? Well, is it ayin hara or is it ayin ra? Because the question is some manuscripts, the most authoritative manuscripts have the hay, and some and a lot don't. So what did he have in mind? So if it's ayin ra, a bad eye, then that would mean that it would apparently fit the context. So Rabbi Yeshua says, if you want to get along with people, you want to be involved in the world, then first of all, you can't walk around and just react negatively with jealousy, with bitterness, with a jaundiced eye to what other people have. Similarly, when you interact with them, you shouldn't give in to your being overly cupidness. You shouldn't give in to your dark side. You should act like a mensch. You should act like a person. You should relate to every single person. I've said this more than once. Relate to every single person as a tzelem Elokim, as a person who was created in the image of God. In other words, I and Ra, if that's what it means, would mean that the way that you look at the world should be with generosity, with empathy, with positivity. And when you interact with people, you should not give it to your baser instincts, but rather act according to your good inclinations. The thing is proper. And that requires a lot of work, always. And we all have Yetzer Hara, and it's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. In fact, it can be one's evil inclination, as it were, one's drives, if they're properly channeled, are a positive good. But still, it's clear if along this line of argument, it would seem that Rabbi Yoshua is talking about how people should get along with each other. Don't hate other people. Because if you do all those things together and you don't, you know, given to your baser side, and you're always looking at a jaundiced eye at other people, and you're always thinking just about me, and you're given into your evil inclination, and you walk around bitter and hateful with regard to other people, then you're not going to get along with anyone. Oh, if that's the way you read it, then what he said before makes all the sense. And in fact, what Rabbi Chanan Zakkai said makes all the sense. It all comes together in one package. What had Rabbi Shlomo ben Hanania said? He said, "What should you look for in life?" He said, "A good friend." What should you avoid? A bad friend. In other words, you need to get along with people. Now, the way to do that is, and not to give it to your baser side, is to, in fact, find good people and not bad people. I mean, that's a given, right? So it's all along the same line. It's all along the same line. And finally, we get back to Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, who said, "Happy is the mother who gave birth to such a kid," because what's the high? Yes, I know. You want your children to be successful, and you want them to be doctors and lawyers and Indian chiefs and all sorts of stuff. Very nice. But at the end of the day, you want them to be a mensch. If we can succeed at raising people that are mentioned, then that's an amazing compliment. So I suggest if you put all three Mishnayot together, you understand what Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai was saying, because he saw in Rabbi Yoshua this positive quality of just acting like a mensch, but working on it. And you can't do it alone. You need to do it when you're surrounded by good people. Choice of one's society, choice of one's community is very, very critical. All right, that's one line of interpretation. The problem is, and it's what I'm about to say is not all that different than what I've said up till now. Most manuscripts say that it doesn't say Ayin Ra, but it says Ayin Hara. Ayin Hara. Or in Yiddish, Ayin Hara, the evil eye. So if that's the case, what Rabbi Yeshua has said is as the evil eye and the evil inclination and hating one's fellow person removes oneself from the world. So let's talk a little bit about Ayin Hara. The belief in Ayin Hara is very, very common. It is not originally a Jewish belief. It is a folk belief. It's attested to way before Abraham, in Ugarit already. In Ugarit and before in Ur, there are there's references not only to the evil eye, but to all kinds of ways of avoiding the evil eye. The evil eye is a belief that people have the capacity, if you look at a person sideways, if you look at a person with malevolence, you look at a person with hatred, that people have the capacity of actually cursing them, of actually hurting them. And it's something you can't see. It's something you'll never know if it's happening. But it's but the belief is very ubiquitous. It's extremely common in the Middle East, although you find it in other cultures as well. Interestingly, the rabbis themselves, as I was always mentioned in passing, the we even today we're not into Ayin Hara, but the truth is, the idea of Ayin Hara, of avoidance of these sort of supernatural malevolent forces that can hurt us and hurt our children or whatever, still very much there. We still say, in Yiddish, you say Ken Ayin Hara. Comes off as Kenahara. Nobody knows what that is, but it's Ken Ayin Hara without the Ayin Hara. I'm like, as if when you say, if you see a little kid and they're so good looking and they're so smart, you say Ken Ayin Hara because you want to protect them from the evil eye. Somebody will look at this kid and say, look at the kid sideways and curse them. In Hebrew, you say Bli Ayin Hara. More ubiquitous in Israel is the Chamsa. What's the Chamsa? The Chamsa is five fingers, okay, hand. Usually there's an eye in the middle, and it's like, stop! Stop! That's how you protect yourself from the evil eye. It's one of the most, the Chamsa is one of the, Chamsa means five in Arabic, is one of the, most popular articles of jewelry jewelry that you can get with big ones and little ones with stones and whatever. And in addition, even if you don't have one around, if you want to prevent the evil eye, you people spit between their fingers, or you say Chamsa, Chamsa, Chamsa. Kilu, stop. Don't stop. Oh, evil eye, stop. Interestingly, Professor Zip Safrai, in his commentary on Avot, mentions that originally Chazal were, the rabbis in the Talmud, were very, very, very wary. They didn't like superstition. You can be sure, of course, that Maimonides, of course, has no truck with this kind of stuff at all. He basically, he says no such thing. And the rabbis themselves apparently were not really into, they didn't believe in it. They fought against it. So when Rabbi Yeshua here is saying Ayin Hara, he doesn't mean using the Ayin Hara. He's saying, if you think that you can hurt other people, if you're going to organize your life around being afraid of somebody else's Ayin Hara, then you're going to, forget it. That's not it's not real. Don't go there. That's very much and if that's the case, it means then the Mishnah would go Ayin Hara, meaning the very giving any credence to the belief of the evil eye, and giving into your own Yetzirah, when one might be connected to the two, and hating other people because you're going to try to think you can do all kinds of stuff to other people. That's going to destroy your place in society. An interesting thing happened over time, that the belief in Ayin Hara went from being a popular superstition to actually being taken somewhat seriously by the rabbis in later parts of time in the Talmud, and also in lots of parts of the Jewish diaspora, both Ashkenazic and Sephardic, to the degree even that that concern with an Ayin Hara affects certain ritual practices and certain halachot. For example, there is an accepted rule that if you're the gabbai of the shul and you're calling people up to have aliyot to the Torah, then you don't call two brothers one after the other, and you don't call a father after a son or a son after a father. Why? Ayin Hara. How it works with the Ayin Hara, I don't know. That's not my strong suit. But it is that's the given reason. Interestingly, however, even though there were rabbis who did accept this, and there are, as I said, rules that are based on the belief in the Ayin Hara, there's a constant throughout the ages, from the early Middle Ages onward, tremendous constant pushback. To say, nah, it's nothing to it. Please leave me alone. So I'll give you two examples. So I mentioned a few times, I mentioned to you first time the names of Rabbi Matityahu Yitzhari. Rabbi Matityahu Yitzhari lived in late 14th, early 15th century Spain. He was a major intellectual. He participated in defending the Talmud at the at Tortosa in the early 15th century. So in so when it comes to and describing Ayin Hara, he says, "V'hu ha'isha katz b'chol tov shi'arelu zulatov yifalbo v'zikeo mitzot arsiut mizgo." So there's no such, implicitly, there's no such thing as Ayin Hara as a supernatural thing. Person is a jaundiced attitude, and he can't stand that anybody else is happy, and therefore he will work over time to make sure that they're unhappy. I mean, what was it? It's like H.L. Mencken had a famous definition of a Puritan. A Puritan is a person who can't sleep because somewhere, somehow, someone is having a good time. Somebody's enjoying themselves. So the same thing. So he says, so you can't, Ayin Hara, don't look and stare at what people have. Don't really look at people who have. And don't, and if you sit there and stare and you get jealous and whatever, it's not going to end well. So that is, and consistently, if you go through the classic commentaries on Pirkei Avot, you get this, you know, if you get the sense that they're constantly trying to block the ubiquitous belief in the evil eye. I wouldn't be surprised if the hay that I mentioned before somehow got lost because the rabbis didn't want people believing the evil eye. That's, you know, it makes more sense that it went from Ayin Hara to Ayin Ra or Ra'a to than the other way around. Even when it comes to, interestingly, in the modern era, we have two major poskim, and with this we'll close today. Two major poskim. Plenty of people believe in Ayin Hara today. I mean, a lot of superstitions have made an incredible comeback in the last 20, 30 years. Astrology and what should we say? Tea reading and coffee grinds and phrenology and God knows what else. Dafkin of 20th century, at least two of the leading halachic authorities, one Ashkenazi, one Sephardi, came out pretty foursquare against giving any credence to the idea of the Ayin Hara. So one of them is Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal. Rav Moshe has a tshuva which he's asked about, to what degree do we really have to be careful, really have to be concerned with Ayin Hara. So they want to give two brothers, one brother an aliyah after the other. So Rav Moshe said, look, it's not such a big deal. He said, look, you know what? He quotes a Gemara in Psachim, and he says, you know what? You know who's affected by evil eye? People who believe in the evil eye. If you don't believe in the evil eye, it's not a function. It doesn't fill any role whatsoever. So don't believe in the evil eye and give the aliyah and goodbye. So that's his opinion. Rav Ovadia, coming from a Mizrahi context, and it's really very interesting that he would say this, as in a recorded lecture that he gave, a popular lecture he gave many years ago, so he's been gone a number of years, in the Beit Knesset HaYazdim, in the Yazdi Shul in near Meir Shearim, he's said, who listens? He says, does anybody pay attention to the evil eye today? It's ridiculous. Nobody should pay attention to the evil eye. Rabbis talked about it. Okay, Beseder. But then he quotes the same thing the Rav Moshe says. If you don't pay attention, if you don't worry about it, if it's not something that's on your agenda, so it's not going to hurt you. So leave it alone. And he just says, you know, like, Rav could be very emphatic. And he absolutely no truck whatsoever with the evil eye, which is striking. I would have expected, you know, those of us who consider ourselves greatly sophisticated, we're very happy, and why would we think otherwise? But it's striking that these two authorities, Dafka decided to take up this issue at a time when, in popular culture, things like witchcraft and all kinds of superstitions have had a resurgence. Now, why have things like this had a resurgence from the late 80s onward? And why did New Age develop and stuff like that? That's not for now, especially since it's already 1:30. So we will see you next week, and same time, same place. And please, if you're in the area, if you're in Tel Aviv this Shabbat, please come and visit the Tel Aviv International Synagogue on Frischman Street. It's right near the water. Friday night, we have a champagne kiddush, a hot chont kiddush after tefillah in the morning at around 10:45, 11:00. I mean, you could come for davening too, but I know a lot of people in that area come JFK just for kiddush. And come over and say hi. And look forward to seeing you. And we will see you next time. In the meantime, have a great week.